Tomorrow, it's going to be the 10th of Shvat, the 10th of the month of Shvat. For Chabad Hasidim, it's a very special day. In 1950, it was the passing of the previous Rebbe. We call it the Friediker. In Yiddish, Friediker means the previous Rebbe. And 1 year later, 1951, our Rebbe took the leadership of the Chabad movement. And again, it's a very special day for many, many reasons. These two ideas bring out other feelings and other ideas and so on. So what we're going to do today is, in order to prepare, so to speak, for the day, I would like to learn with you, not inside the text, because it would take a long time, at least some ideas of a Hasidic discourse. I'll do it as easy as possible, that actually was written down by the previous Rebbe in 1933. But the truth is that the last years of his life, that he lived in the United States, he came to the United States in 1940, and he passed away in 1950, 10 years. The last years of his life, 2-3 years, he barely could talk. He barely could move. It was very, very difficult for him, health in health issues. So his son-in-law, who would be the next Chabad Rebbe, our Rebbe, used to basically do many, many things on his behalf, on his instructions, of course, but he would do things for him. One of the things was to edit these Hasidic discourses that the previous Rebbe wanted printed for a specific date. That means he used to take older Hasidic discourses that he already delivered and so on, and used to say to his son-in-law, to the next Rebbe, print these for this specific date and so on. And the previous Rebbe used to edit a little bit the discourse. That means add notes over here, over there. And then it went out printed like the discourse that the previous Rebbe wanted printed for that particular time. Now, the previous Rebbe wanted one Hasidic discourse, which is very long. It's 20 chapters long, for the 10th of Shvat. That means the day he would pass away, he would pass. I don't know, of course, Hasidim, you know, we say all kinds of things, but I don't know if the Rebbe knew he was going to pass away that day or not. It's not my issue, it's his issue. But the point is, he put out this Hasid discourse for the day of his passing away. So the Rebbe, our Rebbe, took this discourse as a testament, so to speak. This is the message that the previous Rebbe wants from us, for us, for the rest of the generations. And based on that, when our Rebbe took the leadership of the Chabad movement 1 year later, which was a whole story in itself, he didn't want to take the leadership and so on. But okay, so he took the leadership and he delivered a discourse, a Hasidic discourse, explaining basically the first chapter of these 20 chapters of the Hasidic discourse of his father-in-law, his passed away father-in-law. And throughout 40 years, literally, the Rebbe explained twice those 20 chapters. So he went 20 years explaining 20 chapters. In that specific day of the 10th of Shvat, he used to deliver a discourse, sometimes more than one, on the particular chapter that corresponded to that year. So the 1951, the first chapter, 1952, second chapter, and so on. And then again, a whole round of new explanations, 20 more years, 40 years explaining this discourse. What we're going to learn are ideas that come out of the original discourse by the previous Rebbe. What's the subject of the discourse? Oof, it would be so difficult for me to summarize. But I would say, if I had to do it anyway, I would say like this. There's a job we have to accomplish. There's a mission we have to do. Each generation in the Jewish history, in Jewish history, in world history, each generation had a specific mission, something that had to be accomplished. And if you actually learn history, Jewish history around the history of the world, you will find different things happening throughout history in different ages. You have the ages of the Torah itself, Moshe Rabbeinu, and all the stories that appear in the Torah. You have the ages of post-Torah, Yeshua, the judges, up to Shmuel. Then you have the ages of kings, the kings of the land of Israel, some good ones, some bad ones. Then you have the age of the first temple, second temple, exile in the middle, second temple, and then you have Babylon, the whole development of the Talmud itself. Then you have Europe, like many things were happening in those days. Actually, in every single day, many things happen, even today. But the point is that each generation had to accomplish something. Let's take just whatever, the kings. So the second king, basically, second, third, whatever, you could be precise in the story, but the second king, Shlomo Melech, King Solomon, third king, King Solomon, the first one was Shaul, then David, and then Shlomo. You could argue he was the fourth king, but whatever. The third king, he built the temple. So in his generation, the accomplishment had to be a temple. And then, whatever, you can understand, Yeshua had to conquer the land. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to take out the people from Egypt. And so many things happened in each generation. And there's a main subject of that generation. What's our mission? So our generation, now, today, what's our mission? The Rebbe explains that from his accepting the leadership, 1951 on, we are found in the seventh generation of Rebbeim of Chabad. Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Gileadi, and from then on, when Chabad started with Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Gileadi, each generation had to accomplish something. What's the accomplishment of our generation? And the answer of the discourse is to bring down God's presence in the world, to bring Mashiach. That's our mission, so to speak. And that would be the super summary of the whole discourse. In order to accomplish that, many things have to happen within ourselves and in the world at large. But all of them caused by us, by our work within ourselves, because there's a verse that says, "The oilam nosam beliboy," God gave the world in the hearts of men. That means that when we work within ourselves, with ourselves, we are actually working in the world. When we accomplish something within our hearts, in our minds, and so on, we are accomplishing something in the world. So our mission is to accomplish something within ourselves, and that itself is going to bring down God's presence in the world. Okay, so how does it work? And what does it mean to bring down God's presence? Isn't he everywhere? Like the Zohar says, the mystical teachings say, Leisa sarpanuminei, there's no place in the world void of godliness, of God. There's no such a thing. God is everywhere and he sees everything and so on. So what does it mean to bring down? Bring down what? I don't understand. So in order to understand this, I'm just going to read like two lines, not more than that, in order to have a taste at least of what it means to learn a Hasidic discourse. And then you'll have to listen to me, to my understanding of this. Okay, the discourse starts with a verse from Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. And it says, Basi legani acho isikala. I came to my garden, my sister, my bride. So basically, Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, it's a whole interchange between man and woman. And it's very romantic and so on. But the truth is that it's talking about something else completely. It's talking about the relationship between the Jewish people and God. And God is the husband, so to speak, the groom, and the Jewish people is the bride, the wife. And over here, the husband or the groom says to the bride, Bosi legani, I came to my garden. My sister, doesn't mean really sister, because you can't get married to your sister. The point is over here is love, a brotherly love. And my kala, my bride, I came to my garden. And our sages explain in the Midrash that it doesn't say I came to the garden. Like a garden, whatever, there's many gardens. No, I came to my garden, my private place, my garden. What does that mean? The place that was mine, and I was kicked off. I was sent off from this place. I came back, Bossy, I came back. That's what it means in Hebrew. I came back to my place. And the Midrash explains that throughout seven generations of evil doing, of people doing bad, like Cain killed his brother, then Enosh did Avodah Zarah, idolatry, he served of the other gods. And the flood was terrible. God had to destroy the whole land, all the people and all the land and so on, all the earth. and then the Tower of Babel, and there were so many different seven generations that really acted evil in the eyes of God. That those acts kicked out, literally, godliness. In other words, a revelation of God's presence from this world. That doesn't mean that it's not here. Of course, if there's no such a thing as a place void of godliness, of God, because he creates everything and is everything and so on. But do you see it or not? Is it revealed in your life, yes or no? And usually, right now at least, the answer is no. I don't see God. I open my eyes, and the prophet is saying, Ishaya, the eyes are going to see godliness. The flesh is going to see that the mouth of God spoke and so on. So, do you see God right now? No, I don't see God around me, even though he is, but I don't see it. So therefore, there's something that is not revealed. These seven generations of evil-doing people kicked out, made God leave, be not revealed, concealed so strongly to seven levels, seven generations, seven levels of concealment. Like really, really concealed, concealed and concealment with concealment and more concealment and so on, seven times. And then came other seven generations of righteous people, starting from Abraham Avinu, our forefather Abraham, that Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and so on, seven generations that brought down, revealed God's presence from the basically seventh heaven, that's what it's called, seventh heaven, whatever. Seven generations kicked out to the seventh heaven, and then seven generations brought down from the seventh heaven into the earth to be revealed over here. When did this happen? With Moshe Rabbeinu, when he built the tabernacle. Moshe Rabbeinu brought down, finally, so to speak, the divine presence, God's presence, into this world. And that's when God said, Bosi Legani, I came to my garden. I came to my garden. The place where actually was my main place in the first place. When God created the world, he was revealed over here, to the point that the first man, first woman, they spoke with God. He was revealed. And they heard God jumping around the place, going around in Gan Eden, in paradise, whatever that means. So he was over here revealed. And again, he was kicked out. And now Moshe Rabbeinu brought it down. And this seventh generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, the seventh generation from Avraham Avinu, resembles, so to speak, we are the seventh generation of Rebbeim of Chabad. Our Rebbe is the seventh generation of Chabad from the Alter Rebbe, from the founder of Chabad, that resembles that seventh generation of Moshe Rabbeinu bringing down the Shekhinah, the divine presence, God's presence into this world. And that's our job, to bring down God into this world. And how do you do that? How does it work? Okay, just as Moshe Rabbeinu, how did he accomplish bringing down godliness into this world? He built a Mishkan, a tabernacle, with all kinds of materials and different ideas, and copper and gold and silver and wood and whatever, all kinds of materials. He built a tabernacle, making a temple for God in the earth with ground, so to speak, earthly materials. In the same way, we have to build a temple, but it doesn't mean the temple in Yerushalayim. No. God willing, it's going to be revealed soon, speedily in our days and so on, but we can't just sit and wait until the temple just comes down from air, from heaven. That's what actually one of the opinions brings, Rashi, whatever, that the temple is going to come down from heaven. Don't wait. Do something. What do you have to do? You have to build from yourself a temple. You have to become yourself a temple in which the divine presence can be revealed. What does that mean? There's a verse in Parshas Truma. The Torah says, I'm translating literally on purpose, and you will find a problem in the verse that starts talking in singular and ends up talking in plural. Again, do a temple for me, build a temple for me in singular, and I will dwell within them in plural. So our sages ask, wait a second, you start talking in singular and you end up talking in plural. It's weird. What does that mean? And there's a famous explanation by the Shalom, Shnei Luchos Abris, a holy book, Rabbi Shai Horowitz is buried in Tiberia. Okay, he writes like this. It's not written that God is going to dwell in the singular temple. Rather, it says within them, it means within each one of us. We have to make a temple of ourselves. And whatever happened in that original temple, tabernacle and temple and so on, whatever happened over there has to happen within us. We have components in our body, in our soul, that resemble those components of the temple. And there's an avoida, there's a work, a job that has to be done within ourselves that resembles that work that was done in the temple originally. The heart resembles the altar, and the ark resembles the brain, the mind, where the Torah is, where the God's mind is, so to speak. And like this, you have many explanations around mystical teachings that explain how the temple actually resembles different gods, different qualities of God, and also different qualities within our own soul. So we have to do of ourselves a temple. How do you do that? Okay? One of the works that was actually done in the temple was korbanos, offerings, sacrifices, animal sacrifices. So Hasidus explains that each one of us has within ourselves many expressions of the soul. That's a soul within ourselves, but this soul has many expressions. One of the expressions is called Nefesh HaBa'amis, an animal soul. Like, the truth is that, at least from Judaism's point of view, we don't believe in evolution. We're not better animals. Oh, thinking animals, talking animals. No, no, no. We're human beings. It's a completely different type of creature. Human beings. But the point is that even within the human beings, we have animalistic traits. We walk, we grow, we move, and we eat, and we have feelings. And animals also have feelings and do exactly. We reproduce ourselves, and the animals also work the same way. Animals also work the same way. So we have within us an animal soul. And the animal soul, which is again an expression of the soul, it wants and it strives for animalistic things. Again, eat, drink, reproduce, passions, sometimes bad passions and bad things, but whatever, it's just an animal I like, I want, I see, it's for me. That's how the animal works. And it's going to fight for it and so on. So we have to take this animal, and just as in the temple originally, there was a sacrifice of an animal, in the same way, we have to sacrifice our own animal to God. We have to offer our animal to God to elevate it into godliness, to make it a sacrifice to God. What does that mean? You don't have to kill anything, and you don't have to destroy any parts of your body or your soul or anything like that. No. In order to understand this, the Alter Rebbe brings in his discourses, and then the Friedrich Rebbe, this Rebbe that we're learning, he brings in his name from the Alter Rebbe, there's a verse in the beginning of the third book of the Torah, in Vayikra. The Parsha in Vayikra says, over there, teaching and explaining the korbanos, the offerings, over there it says, Adam ki yakriv mikem, korban lashem, mina beheima, mina baka, mina tzanta, kirvus korbanchem. It's a whole verse. A person, when he wants to offer from you an offering to God, from the animals, and he's going to choose domestic animals, from the cows, and from the sheep, you're going to offer your animal to God. That's the verse. And there's a word over here, out of place. And since the word is out of place, as I'll explain in a minute, that means that, of course, Torah is perfect because God is perfect, and the Torah and God are one, and so on. So therefore, that means that it's not out of place. It's teaching you something very deep. Again, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban Hashem. A man, one offers from you guys, an offering to God. The verse should have said, a man from you, when offers an offering to God, they should do this and that. But the verse says, a man, Adam Kiyakri, when a man offers from you, this word is out of place. Mikem, in Hebrew it's just one word, in Hebrew, in English it's two words, from you. But Mikem, it's out of place. So that Rebbe explains, a person, Adam Kiyakri, Yakriv means to offer. but it's directly related. Every single word in Hebrew has a shoresh, a root of two or three letters. The word close means we say karov. That's the way you say close. And yakriv means to offer, which has exactly the same letters as karov, but yakriv is a verb, and close is just to be close. It's an adjective, so to speak. So a person, again, Adam ki yakriv, when a person wants to offer, no, translate different. When a person wants to get close to God, you really want to get close to God? I'll tell you how to do it. Mikem korban lashem. You have to offer yourself to God. Oh, wait a second. How do I offer myself to God? Mina beheima. So it continues the verse saying, your animal. Mina bakar, mina tzender. There are different types of animals. Each one of us represents a different type of animal. Because some people have a very passionate life. Some people are like more cold. You know, the passionate guy is like a cow, which is strong and so on. And the cool guy is like a sheep. Yeah, everything is fine. Even the voice, everything is okay. No hurry, no rush. That's the sheep. So each one of us has different qualities, different traits, character traits. So Mikem, this word that looked to be out of place, is teaching you a very deep lesson. You have to offer your animal to God. You want to get closer to God. Yakriv, korov, you want to be close to God. You have to offer your animal to God. Whatever kind of animal you have to offer it to God. And what does that mean in simple words? You have to refine yourself. It doesn't mean to destroy your animal expression, because it's part of us. There is such a thing. It's brought down even in the Talmud. David HaMelech, King David, murdered, so to speak, his evil inclination through fasting. That's not a common way for everybody. It's not the path, at least for most of the people. But that was his level. But that's not what is expected of us. What's expected of us is to refine our animal, to teach the animal to serve God. How do you do that? By understanding how precious God is for us. He give us food, and he give us sustenance, and he give us money, and he give us health, and he give us a house and a family and so on. By understanding these ideas, very simple and basic ideas, because the animal doesn't understand like spiritual mystical things. Yeah, the world of Atsilus, I don't know what that is. I don't care. How do you eat that? So the animal understands basically just worldly things, worldly matters. So by explaining that those worldly matters actually come from God, so the animal learns to love God and to fear God. Okay, that's basically how we have to work on ourselves, by refining our own animal inside of us. And that means to offer this animal to God. And that's the way to get closer to God. But sometimes it can get very difficult, actually, to work with this animal. Because life can have its difficulties, its problems, its challenges, and it gets difficult. So again, if you're going to think, yeah, God gives me a lot of money. Yeah, you know what? I don't have a lot of money. So don't think about that. Yeah, let's leave God on the side. Okay, God gives me a lot of health. I don't have health. So what are you going to think about? So how do you get closer to God when things start being a little bit more difficult? When things don't flow so easily. So the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, explains further another detail in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle. The Torah says, Atzei Shittim Oimdim, you have to build this tabernacle with wood of cedar. Cedar wood, standing cedar wood, very tall cedar wood, like 10 meters long, whatever. What does that mean? So the word mishitim in Hebrew, shiti, means a cedar, a type of cedar. Very nice. Doesn't say much. But as we learned before, every single Hebrew word has a root of two or three letters. And the word shitim, which is a name, again, a type of cedar, also shares the same roots as the word shtus, stupidity. Shtus, like a fool, foolishness. And the Rebbe explains, that basically there are two types of fullness. You can be a fool in two ways. You can be a fool to go up or a fool to go down. What does that mean? There's a middle path. The Rambam talks about this a lot. There's a middle path. And every single character trait, when a person has to work on himself, herself, and so on, has to strive to go to the middle path. Sometimes a person works in one extreme of life. He gives out too much money away, or he retains too much money for him, and so on, different character traits. So the main way of serving God, the best path of serving God, is to be in the intermediate path. This is, again, in the Rambam, even in Aristotle talks about this. Okay, Aristotle talks about this. Okay, let's go. So there are two ways of deviating from this middle path. Either you deviate above this middle path, and I'll explain what this means, or you deviate below this middle path. What does that mean? Usually when we call a fool means a person that is actually not behaving in the proper way. You expect in a place, in a time, and so on, to have a specific behavior. And when the person doesn't have this specific behavior, it's called a fool. Shtus, shoite, a fool. But again, two ways of deviation. What are the two ways? A person can function as a fool by not recognizing the truth. A person knows the truth. The soul, very deep inside, literally knows the truth of godliness. And the person very deep inside knows that when you don't do God's will, when you don't fulfill God's commandments, you don't do what God is expecting you to do, and you do that which God does not want you to do, you're actually separating yourself from God. And this is called a shtus, stupidity. Why? Because if you really are conscious, you really think about it, that God is the source of life, who wants to be disconnected from the source of life? Nobody. But the problem is that there are certain transgressions that a person recognizes very quickly that you really get separated from God. I'm not going to do that. It's too much. I'm not going to go so far. And each person has his own thoughts, so to speak, on this. What's really so far? There are certain things that you had actually contemplate. Maybe I can do that. I don't know. Yeah, no. God doesn't like it, but it's not so terrible. There are certain things you say, no, up to here. This is my limit. This idea of having different categories, so to speak, of transgressions, certain transgressions certainly separate me from God. Idolatry. Okay, wait a second. What's idolatry? Idolatry means to serve something that is not God, to recognize or to think that there's something beyond God, besides God. Certainly you're separating yourself from God. No doubt about it. You're negating God to that point. So, okay, idolatry I'm not going to do. But you know what? Stealing a little bit, I don't know, keeping a change instead of giving the back, and so on. Each person has his own challenges in life. Doing that is not really separating myself from God. Come on, idolatry is a terrible thing. Killing people, that's a terrible thing, and so on. This idea of having different levels of transgressions, that some of them separated from God and some of them are not so terrible, that's the biggest shtus. That's the biggest stupidity in the world. And that's below, stupidity below the middle path. Why? Because all the commandments, anything, everything that God says means that when you work on that path, whatever God said to do and not to do and so on, you're connected to God. But there's a common denominator, so to speak, on every single mitzvah. The common denominator is, besides the way, the shape this mitzvah takes, the common denominator is, they are the will of God. This is what God wants. So it doesn't make any difference if a person kills, chas v'shalom, God forbid, a person steals, God forbid, or a person just says lashon hara, bad tongue. Yeah, you want to hear the last gossip about blah, blah, blah? Yeah, I have terrible news. This guy, I saw him. The truth is, that the common denominator of all of this is God doesn't want you to do that. So it doesn't really matter what kind of activity it is, killing, chas v'shalom, or stealing, or just saying the last news about your neighbor. That's, therefore, the stupidity lies on thinking that there are different categories. It's not so terrible if I speak bad about my neighbor. I'm not going to kill him, but yeah, that's his biggest stupidity. You're really separating yourself from God. And then you have, again, the middle path. And then you have something beyond. Stupidity beyond the middle path. What does that mean? The Rebbe brings a Gemara, a Talmud. The Talmud in Ksubis brings a very interesting story about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi was one of the greatest sages. Stam Rabbi Yehuda, the simple Rabbi Yehuda brought down in the Mishnah so many, countless times. I didn't count them, that's why it's countless. Some people count them. But whatever, so many times, is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. Every Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. He's buried in the north of Eretz Israel. Okay, so the story says that when there was a wedding, Rabbi Yehuda used to go to the wedding and start playing with fire. You know, you throw and you pick up and throw and pick up, like fire, flames, and things like that. He used to start playing like a fool, you know, just play to bring some happiness to the bride and the groom and so on that they were getting married, which is a mitzvah in itself, to make happy the bride and the groom. And some people asked him, hey, what is this? Like, you're a great rabbi, such an important figure in the Jewish people. What are you doing over here dancing like a fool and playing with fire and with things? What are you doing? And basically, the answer was, when a bride and a groom get actually married, our sages say in the Gemara, in Soita, Ish ve'isha zachu, when a man and a woman are meritorious, shechina shruya b'neihem, the presence of God is within them. Lo zachu, if they're not meritorious, eish echaltan, the fire is going to eat them. What does that mean? The word ish in Hebrew, you write it with three letters, aleph, yud, shin. Ish means man. Isha, it's also three letters, aleph, shin, hey, woman, isha. If you look at the words, again, the letters in these two words, they're basically built in the same way. Aleph Shin, Eish, which means fire in Hebrew, Aleph Shin, both in the word Ish, man, and also in the word Isha, woman. These two letters are common to these two words. Aleph Shin, Eish, fire. And the difference between these two words is just two letters. In the word man, Ish, you have a Yud, a letter Yud, and in the word Isha, woman, you have a letter Hey. These two letters, are two letters of the name of God. The holiest, one of the holiest of the names, Yud K. Therefore, if a man and a woman, Ish ve Isha, they're meritorious, Shekhinah, the presence of God, the Yud and the Hey, it's within them. It's Ish ve Isha. You have the Yud in the man and the Hey in the woman. But if they're not meritorious, the presence of God removes itself from there. And what you're left with, in the man you have Eish, fire. In the woman you have Eish, fire. And fire consumes fire, and it's terrible. It's terrible. So what Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi basically answered, even though not with these words, but what he basically answered was, look, in a marriage, particularly in the moment they're getting married, the presence of God is found over here. In the way of Yud and Hey, these two letters, that presence is found in the party, in the wedding, and so on. And therefore, in order to connect to this presence of God, which is so deep and so profound and so on, the only way to connect to this is to do, quote unquote, foolish things, stupid things, more than what you would regularly do, in order to connect to a very deeper energy that goes beyond intellect, without really matter all the details, doesn't really matter right now, but to connect to that energy, which is beyond intellect, I have to go beyond intellect myself. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi used to dance with fire and throw and pick up fire. What does that mean in regular service to God? The truth is that our animalistic inclinations conceal godliness from us. And we have to, in order to fight, to refine it, to offer it to God, and to get closer to God, and so on, like we explained before, by the temple and the works in the temple, in order to refine it, we have to go beyond our intellect. And the way to go beyond our intellect is, even though, this is one example at least, even though certain things in Judaism we don't understand, and even though certain things in Judaism maybe we don't even enjoy, however, we have to know that the common denominator in every single mitzvah is, this is the will of God. And furthermore, by actually fulfilling the will of God, we at least open our minds and our hearts to understand what God wants from us and how to connect to Him and to learn to enjoy even those things that before we didn't understand, we didn't enjoy. But by doing them, actually, we get a taste of it and we start enjoying them with time. It takes effort. It takes time. There's no such a thing in Judaism as gaining without effort. If you gain without effort, that means that it's not good. It doesn't come from a good place. So that's the idea of, in the words of the Hasidic discourse, shtus de kedusha, stupidity of holiness, holy stupidity, that a person without really mattering whether he is accustomed to keep the mitzvahs, to keep the commandments. It doesn't matter whether you like it. It doesn't matter whether you understand it. It doesn't matter anything in the world. This is the will of God. It doesn't matter if I have to, like the Friedrich Rebbe brings, very interesting. Nobody changes the time of eating. Nobody changes the time of sleeping. But the time of Torah learning, it doesn't really matter. It's today, tomorrow. If I don't learn, it's not going to be very terrible anyway. I learned yesterday. So the Rebbe says, the Friedrich Rebbe says, you have to fix times to learn Torah every day. And yet, in those times have to be fixed, not only in time, so to speak. At this time in the clock, I'll be learning. No, it has to be fixed in your soul. To the point that even if for some forced reason you couldn't take the particular time you used to learn and so on, you don't go to sleep until you finish your stuff, that which you actually chose to learn and so on. So by behaving in this stupid way, quote unquote, by doing that, a person connects beyond intellect to God, and therefore his connection to God becomes a much stronger connection. Because it doesn't depend on what he understands or what he enjoys. It depends on God. And God doesn't it never changes. He's always God. And therefore, we have to learn to be a little bit stupid, but in a good way, so to speak, beyond the middle path and not below this middle path. So all the customs, all the standards of society, all the values of society, the Rebbe calls them complete shtusim, complete stupidities, that they change one day to another. On one year, the fashion says the color of the year is green. Next year, they're going to say, no, the color of the year is red. And those things that change, anything that changes, because it changes, it's clearly a proof that it's not true. Truth never changes. God never changes. And truth is true everywhere. How do you know that? Because there's a word in Hebrew called truth, actually. In Hebrew, we say emes. Emes is composed of three letters. Today, we are with the Hebrew language. Aleph, Mem, Tov. Aleph is the first letter of the alphabet, of Hebrew alphabet. Tov, the third letter, is the last letter of the alphabet. And Mem, it's basically in the middle of the alphabet. So MS, truth, why is it really true? Because from the beginning till the end, passing through the middle, it's always the same. Never changes. Something that changes is not truth. And another idea, furthermore, into this same idea of truth, if you know the Hebrew, whatever, and the letters, the letter Aleph has basically two places where it touches the line, where it stands on the line. When you write an Aleph, it has two places, two dots, where it stands on the line when you write. The letter Mem actually has a dot and a whole line where it stands on the place where you write, on the line where you write. And the letter Tav also has a line and a dot, so it stands strong. On the other hand, the word Sheker means lies. The word Sheker has three letters also, and when you look at these letters, none of them really stands. The Shin has just one dot on top of the line where you write, the Shin, just one dot. The Kuf of Sheker, Kuf, also has just one dot, because the other, so to speak, line of the letter goes below the line where you write. That's the Kuf. And the Reish, it's above the line, but just one dot on the line. Sheker doesn't stand in itself. To the point, and the Rebbe goes on to this at length, actually explaining these two letters, these two words, I'm sorry, Sheker and Emes. And the word Sheker actually is composed of letters that represent certain levels of impurity. So we have to go with the Emes, we have to go with the truth. We have to connect in the only truth, Ein Emes la Torah. The truth, the only truth is Torah. The Torah connects us to godliness. And to end, so to speak, the summary, we have to learn to go beyond our minds in order to get closer to God. Offer yourself, even in ways you would never think doing it, but that's the way actually you go beyond yourself and you grow and you connect to God.